just wait till the courtroom clears.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Ali Abid Beydoun. I represent the appellants, Ms. Laura Gonzalez-Vera, and myself as personal representative of the estate of Mr. Carmelo Soria Espinoza. I am the supervising attorney of the Unruh Human Rights Litigation Impact Clinic at American University, Washington College of Law. And at this time, I'd like to move for this court to allow Ms. Sarah Malikian to present the arguments on behalf of appellants.
All right.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, Sarah Malikian on behalf of appellants. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, this Court should reverse and remand the District Court's decision for two reasons. First, under a plain language reading of 18 U.S.C. 3523, Ms. Gonzalez-Vera is entitled to a court-appointed guardian to assist her with enforcing her judgment against Mr. Townley. Second, a contrary interpretation of the statute frustrates congressional intent to provide judgment holders with redress through the federal courts and grants the Attorney General unfettered discretion over enforcement of judgments against people in the witness security program. 4 years ago, Ms. Gonzalez-Vera received a $7.2 million judgment against Mr. Townley, and to this day she has not received 1 cent of this judgment. Under a plain reading of the statute, she is entitled...
Could she now file a new request with the Attorney General on the basis of the fact that she hasn't gotten any money?
Well, Ms. Gonzalez...
She could, couldn't she? I mean, let's assume that your view of the statute's not accepted by this court. Is there anything that prohibits her from going back to the Attorney General and asking for another determination based on the record that she's received nothing?
If this court does not reverse and remand, then Ms. Gonzalez-Vera would still be without any payment towards her judgment, and it is unclear exactly what should happen.
What in the statute would prohibit her from asking again?
There's no language in the statute that would prohibit her from asking again. However, there would still be the same...
No, I understand your argument about this case. I understand that. And you want to win on your statutory interpretation. I was just asking you that, I mean, the Attorney General, I guess, must have made the judgment that this person who's in the witness protection program was making reasonable efforts because he agreed to pay a certain amount a month, right?
Well, the Attorney General... did determine that reasonable efforts were made, and that reasonable efforts determination does, under subsection A, go to either disclosure or non-disclosure. And if the Attorney General doesn't disclose under subsection A, then a guardian, then a plaintiff can move to subsection B.
Well, but if the Attorney General concludes that the person is making reasonable efforts, he has no authority, right, to release any information.
The reasonable efforts determination does go to the ability to disclose or not disclose, however...
But only if the Attorney General concludes that the person is not making reasonable efforts.
It would be inappropriate to disclose if the Attorney General determines that reasonable efforts are being made. And that determination goes to disclosure or non-disclosure. However, in this case, the Attorney General has not disclosed because we have not received Mr. Townley's identity and location, and
But he hasn't disclosed because he concluded that this person was making reasonable efforts. Isn't that right?
He concluded that for the purpose of disclosure or non-disclosure under subsection A,
right,
that reasonable efforts were made. However,
Counsel, just to get something cleared up, The government's brief, page 10, footnote 1, says that they understand that plaintiff's counsel told the director that he was unsatisfied with the decision and did not want to accept the payment of $75 a week. Is that correct? I don't recall any response to that in your
We never rejected the payment of $75 a week. So
Is this totally false or what? Or is the distinction between reject and not accept?
Well, it's our understanding that the reasonable efforts determination goes only to the disclosure or non-disclosure under subsection A. And then if the Attorney General doesn't disclose under subsection A, then a plaintiff is entitled to a guardian to assist them with enforcing
their
judgment.
I understand your substantive point. I'm just trying to get the facts of this case. The footnote here gives and offers an explanation of why the plaintiff has so far received nothing despite the Attorney General's reasonable efforts determination. And are you saying that's completely wrong?
It's our that the discussions that happened in 2007, which are referenced there, that they were settlement discussions, and that while we did not perhaps affirmatively accept the $75 a week, we did not reject that payment. So
it is conversation between the different sides, sure, which has resulted in this, not so far as appears obstinacy on the part of Townley.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The explanation for nothing having been paid so far, despite the Attorney General's reasonable efforts determination, is not so far as appears recalcitrance on Townley's part, but something to do with these conversations between the litigants in this case.
Well, again, we would just say that we did not reject offer to pay, and that that Mr. Townley still hasn't paid anything towards the judgment in 4 years, and that actually under subsection A, there's a requirement that the reasonable efforts requirement is actually has made reasonable efforts, and in this case, we've received only a promise to pay, and we actually haven't received anything towards the judgment.
Okay, and the reason why you haven't received anything remains shrouded in mystery. That's what we can say about the matter?
Not that it's shrouded.
You don't deny the government's assertion here at all?
We did not reject the payments, and we did not...
Well, the government says did not wish to accept. That may be different from reject.
We received that offer on June 1st, which was the same day that we filed our complaint in the district court, because that was 120 days after we had first requested the disclosure under subsection A. Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me ask you about your the second part of your argument, your policy argument. Given the considerable risks to people who are in the witness protection program to having any information at all released about them, even to a guardian, is there any indication at all that you know of in the legislative history or anywhere else that Congress would have expected that to happen, where someone is making reasonable efforts to pay?
Well, Congress, in introducing the entire section, indicates that that 3523 is about providing judgment holders with redress through the federal courts, so that either under subsection A plaintiff can enforce their judgment directly, or if the information is revealed directly to them. Otherwise, they can petition for a guardian.
Well, that's your interpretation of the statute. That's the way it would work under the government's view. Once the Attorney General determines that someone is making reasonable efforts, then that ends any disclosure. And my question is, why would Congress have wanted to run the risks to the witness protection program involved in releasing information, to run that risk in a situation where the person in the program is making reasonable efforts? Why would Congress have wanted to do that?
Because the overall intent of the statute is for redress to judgment holders, and for judgment holders to be able to enforce their judgments, through the federal courts, and they either can do that on their own or with a guardian. And the guardian mechanism, as we see in the legislative history, Congress notes that the guardian mechanism maximizes the security of the protected witness, and that the overall intent of the statute is to balance a judgment holder's ability to enforce their judgment with the security of the protected person, and that's exactly why the guardian is appropriate.
Does the statute bar a suit under the APA challenging the determination that the protected person has been making reasonable efforts?
The statute doesn't reference that in any way. Right. I'm not sure if it bars it.
It's not clear that your argument that the government's position would make the Attorney General's decision unreviewable is correct.
Well, we agree that
the remedy that you want would not follow.
The reasonable efforts determination is not reviewable, that nothing that what the Attorney General does in subsection A is not reviewable because the reasonable efforts determination and the security concerns inform the decision to disclose or not disclose, and neither the reasonable efforts determination nor the security concerns nor the decision to disclose or not disclose, none of that is reviewable, and that's exactly why a guardian is appropriate.
I'm sorry. I thought first you said statute was blank on the question of reviewability of the AG's reasonable payments determination. But then it seemed to come back as the answer went on.
Well, I'm not sure about the sort of how the APA works in conjunction with the statute, but it's our position that the Attorney General's reasonable efforts determination that he makes under subsection A is not reviewable because it is that decision taken together with the security concerns that then allows him to make the decision to disclose or not disclose under subsection A. And none of those actions are reviewable. It's just that if he discloses, then a judgment holder can enforce on their own, or if he does not disclose, then subsection B is triggered and a guardian is appointed. Your Honors, a contrary interpretation also grants the Attorney General unfettered discretion over whether and how a judgment holder's judgment will be enforced against someone in the witness security program. And Congress did not intend this unfettered discretion when they enacted the statute.
Wasn't there a proposal to have the Attorney General's decision reviewable by the courts, and the Justice Department opposed that, and Congress didn't require that, didn't put that provision in, right?
Excuse me? The GAO?
Yeah.
The GAO report did suggest, noted the procedural deficiencies of the previous program and suggested reviewability of the Attorney General's decision, and Congress chose not to make the Attorney General's decision reviewable, but instead created the guardian mechanism so that the Attorney General's decision under subsection A is not reviewable, but instead a judgment holder can enforce with a court-appointed guardian if they do not receive the information directly to them.
Well, that doesn't really answer the question because the guardianship provision would still have teeth under the government's view. It would just only work in a situation where the Attorney General had concluded that a person was not making reasonable efforts, but it was too dangerous to release the information to the plaintiff.
Yes.
I mean, that's another way to interpret that provision.
That is the government's interpretation. However, that is a much narrower interpretation of subsection B, that it's only triggered.
Well, it might be narrower. It's narrower, but it also might be correct.
You say in your reply brief that if you read the sentence starting, if the Attorney General determines the person does not make, that the Attorney General reads that only if, then the Attorney General. Why isn't that an entirely plausible reading? Except in philosophy classes, most people do use if implied and only if. such and such?
Sure. Well, only is not present in subsection A, and additionally...
That's why I alluded to ordinary language.
Well, in addition to only not being in that sentence, subsection B, which discusses the requirements that a petitioner must meet to petition for a guardian, and subsection B3, which says that the court shall appoint a guardian, the only two requirements listed are that the judgment holder holds a valid judgment against someone in the program and that the Attorney General has not disclosed.
Yeah, but the government says the answer to that is that we haven't had a decision to deny disclosure because we haven't satisfied the first step, right? And that is what follows if you read if as only if, and I would suggest that's a very normal reading.
Well, we read it so that that in concluding, or I guess in that at the end of subsection A plaintiff either has, that the Attorney General has either disclosed or not disclosed. And in this case, the Attorney General didn't disclose, and that's exactly why we petitioned for a guardian. That the reasonable efforts determination and the security concerns listed in subsection A that inform the Attorney General of that decision are not listed in subsection B in either B1, which discusses petitioning the court, or B3, which discusses appointment of a guardian. I know that my time is up. I'd like to, and if there are no further questions,
I do have just one question on A, and that is the sentence, the Attorney General shall take appropriate steps to urge the person to comply with the judgment. Do you have any input on that?
Yes, there's several places, including there, that shall take appropriate steps, where Section A requires the Attorney General to urge the judgment holder, to urge the protected person to comply with the judgment against them. And that because the Attorney General must encourage the judgment holder, the protected person to comply, and because the Attorney General also has the authority to disclose that person's identity and location if they are not taking reasonable steps, that urges compliance and sort of threatens the protected person to comply, to not risk their security. So subsection A is, we argue, is really about the Attorney General's rights, responsibilities under the statute. However, if disclosure does not happen, then a plaintiff still has rights under B.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Wright.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Abby Wright, and I represent defendants in this matter. The district court correctly concluded that 18 U.S.C. section 3523 does not entitle plaintiffs to the appointment of a guardian in this case. Indeed, plaintiffs cannot proceed under subsection B1. Section 3523 is an integral part of one of the most sensitive law enforcement programs in the country. Subsection A lays out a step-by-step process. First, the Attorney General determines whether reasonable efforts have been made to comply. Next, the Attorney General urges the protected person to take steps to comply with the judgment. Then, if the Attorney General determines that a person has not made reasonable efforts to comply, then the Attorney General has a decision to make. He then decides whether or not to disclose the protected person's location and identity based on his consideration of the risk of danger to the protected person.
What happens if the Attorney General makes a reasonable efforts determination and then it turns out 5 years later that the person has not been complying?
Well, I think, Judge Tatel, you hit on this in the opening argument, that the person can return to the Attorney General at that point, can request assistance again in enforcing the judgment.
So in this case, the plaintiff here could, since the plaintiff hasn't been paid, go back and ask for another determination?
That's right, Your Honor. And so I think the issue of whether what payments, the payments have not been made.
Suppose the Attorney General works out a deal where the person pays $1 a month. Mm-hmm. So it would take, what's the judgment in this case?
It's about $7 million.
$7 million months to pay it off. Is that a, it's completely unreviewable under your view, right?
That's right, Your Honor, but I think there's nothing, there's no basis in this record or anything in history to suggest the Attorney General.
I wasn't asking about this case. This was a hypothetical.
Well, if the Attorney General determined that reasonable effort, that was reasonable efforts, then that would in fact be reasonable efforts.
Why would Congress have written the statute that way?
There is no reviewability of that decision.
Why would Congress? You can answer his question.
I think we agree with appellants. I think that there would not be judicial review of the reason. Well, I think
there's a general presumption in favor of judicial review.
Under the APA,
there's no express preclusion here that I could see.
I think if you look at the entire witness security program, 3521 to 3528, there's no indication that Congress intended any kind of judicial review for the Attorney General's decisions regarding the administration of the program.
But you see, under the plaintiff's view, there wouldn't be any judicial review. The Attorney General can make his decision, and he can decide that $1 a month for 9 million years, 9 million months is enough. And if the plaintiff isn't happy with it, the plaintiff can go ask the court to appoint a guardian. And the judge, the guardian, would then litigate the case. It's not second-guessing the Attorney General's position. It's just providing an alternative means of litigating the issue.
Well, I think Congress did intend to provide that, but only under certain circumstances.
Well, no, you've answered the question by stating your view of the statute. I was simply saying that this would not involve. Your argument was Congress did not intend judicial review of the Attorney General's decision.
That's right.
I was simply pointing out that under the plaintiff's view, there wouldn't be judicial review of it. It would just be the district court opening a new avenue for the plaintiff to seek redress against the person in the witness protection program.
I think that's right, Your Honor. The guardian.
You think that's right?
I don't think it's right. Excuse me. Under their position, I think, and I just to clarify what the guardian does. The guardian, you're right, is not reviewing the reasonable efforts determination. The guardian.
No, I'm not talking about the guardian. I'm talking about the court.
The court. Yeah, and I think we agree that there would.
No review there. Right.
There's no review. But that issue is not.
So why isn't that a, sort of a nice logical balancing of the two interests here? In other words, the Attorney General makes his decision, and if the plaintiff isn't happy, then they can have a guardian, which is also fully protective of the program.
Well, I think we go back to the plain language of the statute. Is our first response, and that is that the Attorney General.
I wouldn't call this statute plain.
The language of the statute.
I've seen plain languages. This isn't it.
Well, Your Honor, the statute.
I mean, I could have written, you and we could have written this statute very clearly if,
well, I th-
if
I
you
think
had
Your
wanted
Honor
it to say
certainly
what you said. This is fairly convoluted. It may ultimately be clear, but.
Well, I think it says if the Attorney General determines that a person has not made reasonable efforts to comply, then the Attorney General makes that decision whether or not to disclose. And so as Judge Williams noted, the ordinary meaning reading outside of a symbolic logic class would, of course, be only if. It would make no sense for Congress to have said, if the Attorney General determines reasonable efforts have not been made, he makes a decision to disclose. And even if he doesn't decide that, he can also make a decision to disclose. So I think the language.
I think you argued in your brief that the plaintiff's reading in all cases gives the judgment creditor a right to disclosure. Right.
We argue that in every case where the Attorney General, where the plaintiff doesn't know the location, has not been told the location and identity, and has a judgment, that they would then be entitled to proceed under B1 and B3 for a guardian. Not that they would be, not that that information would be disclosed directly to plaintiffs.
Right. 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 I understand. But that's, so that's automatic.
I think under their. Under their reading, that's what they believe Congress intended, but I think there's nothing in legislative history to indicate that's what Congress intended. And in fact, Congress talks about debtors who are not complying with judgments, and I think the reasonable efforts determination, the Attorney General determines what reasonable efforts to comply with the judgment are.
I'm curious how this works. Has there ever been a case where a guardian's been appointed?
Well, Your Honor, there are two cases that are available on Westlaw regarding the statute. In fact, in 1985, there was a guardian appointed for the same protected person, a different lawsuit involving the actions for which he testified for. Other than that, the United States Attorney's Manual requires U.S. attorneys to file anything dealing with a protected person under seal, and so I'm not. There may be sealed matters that I'm not aware of.
Well, but we would know if there were any guardian. That's not under seal, is it, the fact that the district court appoints a guardian? Or is that under seal also?
Your Honor, I don't know, and I don't think I'm in a position to
I don't think
sure.
It's relevant. I'm just curious.
Yeah, all I can say is that there was a guardian in 1985 in this case.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me ask you about that. In your brief, you say on page 19, with respect to that appointment of guardian, you say the Attorney General did not object to the appointment of a guardian. Where do you get the standing of the Attorney General to object to the appointment of a guardian?
Your Honor, we were just describing what happened in the past, and there's nothing in this record about why the decision was made at that point.
Where's the statutory authority for the Attorney General to object to the appointment of a guardian otherwise than through your interpretation of the statute?
I think we meant it through the interpretation.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we meant as
matter of our concern. What's your answer to Judge Williams' question about why, about what happened to these monthly payments, why they haven't been made?
Well, Your Honor, as we stated in our brief, I wasn't at the meeting. I don't know what was said. From talking with attorneys in the department, it's our understanding that plaintiffs simply said they didn't want to accept the $75 per week.
There's nothing in the record.
There's nothing in the record because the record ends at June 14th meeting taking place.
I see.
The district court decided this as a motion to dismiss, so accepted the complaint allegations as true.
In the reply brief, footnote 4, they say counsel for Mrs. Gonzalez-Vera did not reject DOJ's promise. This was discussion of that settlement.
I think that they
meeting.
Dispute.
I don't know. What is DOJ's promise, anyway? Is that, according to this affidavit, he doesn't ensure that Townley's going to pay $75 a week. I mean,
right. It was a reasonable efforts determination that it was reasonable for Townley to pay $75 per week based on his financial circumstances, his assets, his debts. There's no separate. The Attorney General has the duty to urge the protected person to comply under the statute. Are there any further questions?
Any more questions?
Me? All right. No.
We would ask the district court's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Does she have any more time? All right. Why don't you take a minute?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just to clarify the point about Mr. Townley's promise to pay $75 and whether or not we rejected that, our understanding also is that that was a conditional promise until his financial circumstances changed, and that when the government made offers to us, we responded with a counteroffer, and that was already when the complaint had been filed. So, additionally, Your Honors referenced the fact that a guardian has already been appointed to review Mr. Townley's assets in a separate case 25 years ago, and we feel that because a guardian was already successfully appointed there, that that shows that the security concerns, that the balance between a judgment holder's right and the protected person's security really are met by the guardian, that the guardian meets that balance. If there are no further questions.
All right, thank you.
We respectfully request that you reverse and remand. Thank you.
I don't need one.